You're with us for the morning show as we check in on stimulus deal negotiations on Capitol Hill. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The final remains of the CARES Act expires in 13 days, and the question is, how does this next stimulus relief package differ from the first one President Trump signed nearly 9 months ago? And will it be enough? Will it be enough to help frontline workers, to help unemployed Americans and businesses weather those difficult winter months ahead? Your questions about this roughly $900 billion deal and the politics surrounding it, we're at 800-642-1234. Craig Gilbert is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's nice to be with you.
Well, today is supposed to be the big deadline, right, for lawmakers to resolve all of their disagreements, their battles, and to pass matching bills in the House and the Senate. And then there's the critical government funding bill in the mix. Can you sort this out for us and bring us up to speed?
Well, so let's start with the government funding issue. This is actually a hard deadline of midnight tonight to get a stopgap funding bill passed. If that doesn't happen, and we've been down this road before, it would initiate a partial government shutdown Saturday morning. So that's kind of a must pass piece of legislation. And it's happening at the same time as lawmakers are trying to pass the first, you know, sort of COVID stimulus package since this past spring. So both these things are happening at once. They're hoping to get them both done today, but there's certainly a very good chance that, you know, the stimulus package, the COVID package could carry over into the weekend. Both could carry over into the weekend, but, the first line urgency is on getting the government funding package passed as kind of a stopgap to avoid a partial government shutdown.
Okay, and this would be the third stopgap spending bill, if I'm counting right. I mean, they keep kicking the ball down the road.
Yeah, it's not the first. Again, we've been down this road before. Congress is not functioning at a high level right now. It hasn't been for some time. This has all been playing out in the middle of a presidential election at a time when there's pretty narrow margins of control in both chambers, and a time of divided government and a time of, you know, deeply polarized political landscape. So all those things have made it harder to get these things done, even routine things done.
So as you look at what is being crafted for this next stimulus deal, what are the most vexing issues where lawmakers really need to find some compromise, find some common ground on this deal?
So certainly the size of the package is an issue. Democrats have been pushing for a bigger package and Republicans have been pushing for a smaller package. There's also the issue of direct aid to states to help them weather this crisis. It's something that Democrats have really pushed for. There's a lot of resistance among Republicans to that. So that's, you know, maybe the single biggest sticking point in all of this. We're also, you know, this isn't, you know, this debate isn't entirely transparent. So we're just sort of relying on, you know, we're not watching this unfold before our very eyes. So like a lot of people, I'm sort of relying on what I'm hearing from other sources on this, but you've got a reported effort by Republicans to limit the financing power of the Federal Reserve when it comes to responding to this crisis. And then you've got, you know, sort of related issues, obviously all the fine print about, you know, who's eligible for the stimulus checks and what the criteria are for that. And I'm sure there's a number of other kind of second order and third order issues out there.
We have the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert. He's bringing us up to date on the stimulus package negotiations that are unfolding on Capitol Hill and the latest on the critical government funding bill that has to be addressed as well with Friday today, midnight, the deadline. You can join in with your questions about what you see in these negotiations. What will Congress do? Join in at 800-642-1234. You know, Craig, there has been certainly talk about what these stimulus checks might look like, who might be eligible. Do we have any inkling about what is being hammered out in terms of the size and who would get such stimulus checks?
Well, just to break down the package a little further, I mean, one component would be more than $300 billion in small business assistance. We're also talking about money for vaccine distribution, jobless aid, which was in previous packages. They're talking about sort of 10 weeks of jobless aid in the COVID crisis. And then $600 stimulus checks. But what's, again, we don't know with certainty is, you know, how many people would get those checks and what the eligibility requirements would be.
Are there signs that our economy is deteriorating here in these final days of the CARES Act? What are some of the economic signals that we're seeing?
Well, there are signs. You know, this has been a really, really bumpy road, and there have been times during the pandemic when it looked like the economy was, you know, roaring back from the body blow it took in the spring. But some of the indicators have flattened in recent months. And so there is a lot of concern, obviously, among office holders and policymakers that that the situation, you know, is fairly dire, and that is fueling certainly a lot of the urgency to get something done.
You know, the Paycheck Protection Program was such a huge thing for businesses in the first CARES Act. There's also been in the second round a lot of clash from lawmakers over, you know, money being perhaps given to theaters or music venues or restaurants. And do we have any indication here that those entities would get more support this round?
Yeah, there is support, and it's not, it does, you know, that support isn't entirely limited to one party. I mean, obviously, there's more support on the Democratic side for the kind of aid you're talking about. But there are Republicans on the Hill that also support doing something, you know, for a range of groups. It would include, you know, theaters, museums, obviously restaurants. So there's certainly a potential to find some common ground on that front. Again, you know, against the backdrop of some overarching differences between the two parties over how big any aid package should be.
What is the view on the eviction moratorium that will sunset here at the end of the month?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. So as you know, if they work on this through the weekend, then and they are able to pass another stopgap bill so that they can keep working on this, how closely linked might be the stimulus bill with the government funding bill? I mean, should you be mixing those two?
Well, sometimes these things, you know, sometimes the hard deadline in one case can help spur lawmakers to get the other thing done. Uh-huh. Obviously, there's these two things don't have to be done at exactly the same time. But I think when you have sort of dual deadlines, I think that adds to a sense of urgency. And I think it creates a will on the part of lawmakers to just, you know, get the whole thing done rather than, you know, we're heading into the holiday season. Obviously, the government funding gap measure has to be done. But I think they want to get both things done because the longer, you know,
they won't want to draw this out. Right. I want to pause there with Craig Gilbert, who is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Checking the WPR.
You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're checking in on Capitol Hill, where lawmakers are racing to complete a relief package deal. So the prospects are agree on a stimulus deal as part of a sweeping government funding bill, pass a third stopgap spending bill so negotiations can continue over the weekend and further, or let the government shut down at midnight. Where do you stand on this? What should lawmakers do? It's 800-642-1234. Craig Gilbert is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, are all of those scenarios then in play?
Well, I think there's going to be a stopgap funding measure. Okay. Whether it happens today or tonight or, you know, tomorrow, I think it's going to happen. And even if there's a very short-lived partial government shutdown, I don't think the impact will be dramatic if, again, if the bill is taken care of this weekend. I think there's also a high expectation that the stimulus will get done too, even if it could drag on a little bit longer. Obviously, that's a more complicated piece. And there, as we've talked about, there are kind of lingering stalemates on some issues there. So so I think we'd be surprised if this thing just sort of blew up and was unresolved going into early next week.
We want to get your take on Senator Ron Johnson's Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, the hearing Wednesday, and the conspiracy theories and the whole undermining the Biden victory. And we have some of the tape.
This is not disinformation, this hearing today. This is getting information we have to take a look at to restore confidence in our election integrity. We're not going to be able to just move on without bringing up these irregularities, examining them, and providing an explanation.
Okay, so he brought no specific evidence. What did you take away from what Johnson was saying?
So I talked to Senator Johnson the day before his hearing, and in that interview, he said that he basically accepted Joe Biden's victory as legitimate and the election as legitimate. He accepted the results nationally and in Wisconsin. While he did have, while he did believe there were irregularities, I mean, his position is basically, you know, there's always some level of fraud in these elections. It's just, it normally doesn't rise to the level of actually altering the outcomes. And he said, I haven't seen anything that would alter the outcome in this election. So that was his overarching position. But at the same time, you know, he held this hearing, which did become a platform for, you know, some of the, you know, claims, some of them more outlandish than others, that the Trump campaign and the president and his supporters have made about the election being stolen, the election being illegitimate, the election being fraudulent. And so there's a spectrum of issues here that did get aired out at the hearing. You know, most of the witnesses, again, there were several witnesses, state level witnesses that were from basically, there were advocates of the president and his campaign that were part of efforts to overturn the election results in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nevada. And again, a spectrum of claims being made that some Republicans just sort of, kind of accept under the umbrella of these are irregularities. But on closer inspection, they turn out to involve, you know, in many cases, election procedures that have been in place for several years. And have been in place when Republicans control the election process in states like Wisconsin. So, on the Republican side, you've got, you know, Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky kind of blithely asserting the election was stolen at this hearing without foundation. And then you've got, you know, Senator Johnson, who's accepting the results of the election, but making arguments, but sort of accepting the premise that there was a level of irregularity and a level of problem that I think goes beyond certainly what the courts have found.
Obviously
are issues related to election procedures that, that can be ironed out, but that's a separate question.
Yeah, it got heated at times. Was Johnson challenged for doing this, for holding this hearing?
Well, you know, there's the context of all this gets pretty complex. And it, again, the most heated moment came over an issue that was only indirectly related to the subject of the hearing. And that was sort of Russian disinformation. It had to do with Johnson's own investigation this year into Hunter Biden, mm-hmm. Joe Biden's son. you know, an investigation in which he was accused by Democrats of being sort of, you know, kind of promoting Russian disinformation. He was sort of burning over that claim and it got triggered by some things that were said at the hearing, and he lashed out at the top Democrat on the committee, Michigan Senator Gary Peters, and he lashed back. But it was pretty emblematic of kind of the real bitter acrimony surrounding these election issues, you know, which again extends back to, on the Republican side, their grievances about the investigation into President Trump, and Democratic grievances about the investigation into Hunter Biden, and all the ill will over this election itself.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert. He's bringing us up to date on the politics on Capitol Hill. What is the most pressing need for Congress to address now? What would help you more, a stimulus check or unemployment assistance? Join in at 800-642-1234. So, Craig, I'm wondering, did the cyber attack that we learned about this week, which is becoming much bigger than at first blush, did that come up in the hearing at all, or has that been talked about even more so this week on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, it didn't really come up
okay.
in a central way in the hearing. Mm-hmm. And again, I should mention too about this hearing. This was Senator Johnson's final hearing as chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. Whatever happens in the Georgia elections next month, which are going to determine control of the Senate, whether the Senate Republicans are in the majority or the minority for the final 2 years of Ron Johnson's second term in the Senate, the Republicans term limit their chairman. And so his time will be up as chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. He'll probably, if the Republicans retain control, be a subcommittee chairman of the Committee on Investigation. So we'll continue to see him doing investigations and chairing some hearings, but he won't have the profile that he's had in recent years as chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. But with respect to the question you asked, you know, it didn't really figure in a significant way in this hearing. And it's just, you know, it's sort of unfolding. It's hard to sort of evaluate the impact it's having right now on Capitol Hill. But okay. As you said, you know, as the scale of it becomes increasingly clear, I think we're going to see a lot of fallout.
Earlier this month, the Texas Attorney General had filed the lawsuit seeking to overturn election results in key swing states, including here in Wisconsin. It was tossed out by the Supreme Court, but not before more than 100 members of Congress had signed on in support. What do you think the long-term effect will be on that move?
Well, interestingly, there was only one, if I'm not mistaken, one member of Congress, one Republican member of Congress from Wisconsin who signed on to that effort out of, the five House members and the one senator on the Republican side. That was Tom Tiffany, who represents northern Wisconsin. That's the seat that was once held by Sean Duffy.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't get a lot of support from Wisconsin Republicans. Again, this has been kind of a little bit of a fault line on the Republican side, but in terms of how far they want to go in, you know, kind of following down the road that President Trump has carved out when it comes to making, you know, sort of sweeping baseless claims about a stolen election. But I think it's gonna, you know, it, I think it's left certainly a pretty bitter wake. And these election fights have a way of kind of compounding and escalating. And, you know, it's pretty sobering, I think, when you think about, you know, whether this signals, you know, more future post-election fights over elections, which normally don't happen unless we're talking about, you know, a few dozen votes deciding the outcome of an election. But if that threshold gets raised to several thousand votes, which normally haven't been enough to sort of trigger these kinds of, you know, furious post-election fights. They have happened in the past, but it seems like we're lowering the bar now. So I think that's a pretty sobering signal in the future. And we're certainly going to have a lot of close elections in our future.
You know, I mean, you've been covering Congress, Capitol Hill for so long. I'm just wondering, as you look at the incoming Biden administration, how do you think they will do in this type of climate that we're seeing now with the bickering and the infighting and the inability to find consensus?
So I think Joe Biden sort of sees himself as, you know, a pragmatist and, you know, a kind of moderate liberal. And I think he sees himself as someone who could, you know, find some common ground and get things done. But I think it's going to be extremely difficult because, you know, for all the reasons we've talked about, you know, the distance between the two parties, the pressures internally within each party, and also just the thin margins of control. I mean, we're talking about a U.S. Senate where, you know, two runoff elections in Georgia on January 5th are going to determine, you know, which party controls the Senate. And if it's the Democrats, it's going to be a 50-50 Senate. That's where control is going to be decided by the, you know, the vice president's vote.
Lots to watch for. Craig, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.